This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Tom Romeo. He's the president of Maximus Federal Services. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm doing well.
Well, we're not going to talk about the Washington Nationals this morning. We're going to talk about healthcare IT. That's the general topic. And we've drilled down to many, many different aspects of healthcare IT. We've talked about mHealth and mobile devices. We've talked about accreditation for actual healthcare products in the CMS. But I thought today we'd pull out and maybe take a look at a different aspect of the whole topic of healthcare IT, is this idea of placing a claim and seeing how this claim gets processed and what happens if you have an appeal on the claim, and is this going to change at all in the next couple of years, and where does Maximus fit in, and where does a listener fit in? I mean, if you're a federal IT professional listening to the show, you may maybe listen to see what Tom has to say and maybe has some insight on business process management. Or if you're just a regular listener, you go, well, geez, I may be filing a claim here in the next couple of weeks, and how long is it going to take to process, and what's normal, what's not normal, and what is an outlier, and when do you go into the appeal process at all? But before we begin, Tom, why don't you give our listeners a little bit about your background and how you wound up with Maximus, please?
Sure, John. So I started my IT career with IBM and spent about 25 years, had a great career with them. Spent a couple of years with Accenture, one of those running their healthcare business in Canada. So I get to see a different perspective on healthcare through that year. And then this opportunity came up at Maximus to take over as president of their federal business. And I just saw it as an opportunity to get a little closer to the customer and the business process, and thought that Maximus, who really focuses on health and human services, was a great fit for where I wanted to spend the latter part of my career.
We were reminiscing before show about IBM years ago. IBM used to stand for inexpensively built in Mexico. and that's all changed. But that was many, many years ago. So you have a technical background and you have a health background. And I think what's really important is that maybe you've learned something in Canada and have a different perspective. And it's always nice to get a perspective on a problem that you never thought of, or I never thought of doing it this way. And so it's kind of the best of all worlds. I think our listeners can benefit from some of the approaches you have here. Well, what I tell my students is that, first of all, you have to define the problem, and then you have to maybe suggest a solution and then consider options. And let's define the problem we have right here. So we have the federal government, and there is a large volume of claims in the healthcare area that it's receiving. And you can tell me the millions and millions, but it's a shocking figure, isn't it?
That's a very large number, yes.
So we have a large volume of claims. I have read upwards of 700,000 claims are sitting out there in different organizations. Is that a fair number? Is that too high or too low?
Well, I think if you look just at Medicare claims in a year, it's in the millions and millions number.
Millions and millions. And if you think of if you have a problem with your car and you go in, there's usually four or five pieces of paper involved in it. And if you take and amplify that to a medical situation, there are more than four or five pieces of paper involved, or a substantial amount of information, and then multiply it by a million, all of a sudden we don't have a little problem. We have what we call technically a huge problem, huh?
And that's absolutely right. And if you take that problem, John, and kind of make it the broader government problem, which is they provide benefits across healthcare, but also across disability and many other benefits programs. And each one of those has that large volume. So at VA, for example, there are 500,000 backlog disability claims for vets looking for benefits.
I was at a HIMSS meeting last year, and they were talking about, you know, the backlog. And I was sitting next to a gentleman. He turned to me and he said, yeah, I've been waiting a year for my claim. I mean, a random sampling, just someone at a meeting. There were 200 people in the audience, and he happened to be there. So this is a pretty obvious problem, I would say, huh?
It is. You know, I think as the economy has turned down and people are looking for more benefits from the government, that the volume of claims rises due to that, and the volume of appeals is really related directly to the volume of claims.
I was driving home last night going down Route 28, and I tool around listening to all kinds of different radio stations. I was listening to NPR, and they had a 20-minute excerpt on, guess what, claims processing. And they interviewed human beings like the guy in the meeting sitting next to me. And they said, well, geez, you know, the backlog is down 35%, but this fellow here can't get his claim paid. But there's a lot of different numbers that are thrown around out there. They say, well, the backlog, and it's technically defined as, I think it's 4 months. If it's more than 4 months, it's the backlog item. And that's been reduced. But that doesn't mean that the total's gone down. It's just I think it's a different topic to even define, isn't it?
It is. I think, and it's different for every area that you focus on, but I think one of the things that we focus on with our contracts of the government is timeliness. And usually those timeliness metrics for us are to resolve an appeal in 45 to 60 days.
Those are good numbers and good target days. You know, when I've got three grown kids, when my son was 16, I made him learn how to change a flat tire. And I said, well, Kevin, here's how you do it. First, you loosen the lug nuts, then you jack it up, and then you take the tire off. Because if you loosen them when it's jacked up, the car can topple over. And so a few years later, I said, you know, Kevin, that's really kind of like business process management. Step, 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 in order to do it efficiently. And when you look at a claim, there must be some kind of business process management associated with a claim, a step-by-step claim or an ABC. And this is learned through bad experiences with changing flat tires or bad experiences with bad experiences with processing claims, huh?
It is a great example, John. I think, you know, we're going to talk about the technology and how it applies to the problem. But really, it starts with defining the business process and refining the business process to ensure that you can get a timely and accurate resolution to a claim or an appeal.
You know, Google's famous for doing search engine optimization. You put in a keyword and you see what pops up. I imagine that 6 years ago, if you had typed in outcomes or something like outcomes-based, you wouldn't get many hits. If you type in outcomes-based programs today, you get a million hits. And I think what's happening is the whole idea of business process management for health claims, all of a sudden we have to incorporate outcome-based management and what the results are going to be more than we have in the past, because there's a bigger emphasis on quality now, isn't there?
There's a much higher emphasis on quality, and it's what it should be. I mean, you're not looking for a decision. You're looking for an accurate decision. And so quality is one of the very important metrics that are there. And if you look across the government, I think outcomes-based programs bring the government a very high value and get them return on their programs. So it's not really a system that you're looking for to solve a problem. It's the timely resolution and accurate decision of an appeal.
So the outcomes that we want, I guess, if we look at the people who are listening, you know, the people who are listening may be working for the federal government and be veterans and have a claim as well. I mean, this is not unusual to have an audience like that. And so for a citizen like that, one outcomes would be to have better and faster citizen claims. I mean, faster is better, right?
Right. I think certainly faster is much better. Actually, in the process of claims, usually there's an initial claim, and then, or actually maybe a request for a benefit even. And then if you're denied that request or claim, there's an appeal process. And then sometimes there are multiple steps in the appeal process. So that timeliness becomes a big factor when you look at the potential of all the steps in the process before you come to a resolution.
You know, I facetiously talked about car and changing a flat tire and everything else. And if you have a flat tire, you can always get a ride with someone else. But with a medical problem, This is a human being with pain. And all of a sudden, talk about a pain point. This is it amplifies it much more than something as simple as an automobile repair.
Which is one of the reasons that I came to Maximus. And one of the things that we're very focused on Maximus is that it's really about the client experience. And really, you have to remember who it is that you're trying to serve. So even if the answer is a negative one, one that they wouldn't prefer to hear, providing it in a timely fashion with accurate information and reasoning is critical to those people.
Yeah, bad news doesn't get better with time.
Exactly right.
I've had to do that, say that to some of my employees as well. What we're going to do is take a little break, and we come back. What I'd like to talk about is, so let's say we have a system that provides better and faster citizen claims. Well, then the next step is, well, what about security? What about scalability? What about this fancy pants word, extensibility? And how can a technician like you or someone with a technical background actually respond to outcomes measures that involve a dynamic environment? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, Tom Romeo, President, Maximus Federal Services. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tom Romeo. He's the president of Maximus Federal Services. For more information, you go to maximus.com. I think there's a federal site in there. You can get information from Maximus. What we're talking about today is, so we have a healthcare system and there are claims that have to be processed. And there's this thing called business process management and what are the best practices for that. And we spent a whole 10 minutes talking about, volume and what this process management looks like. And we talked about improving citizen services. So I think right before the break, I posed the question. I said, so we got a system here. Seems to work. It seems to be efficient. Holds up. What happens when things change? What happens when security requirements change? What happens when it has to scale and is unforeseen things happen? What happens on October 1st? What happens in January 1st? And then it gets into a technical word called extensibility, which the software developers like to talk about. Well, Tom, so what happens is you get a system that's working. How do you plan for change?
So in a lot of these systems, John, what happens is, it starts out pretty small. So it might be you and I working together on an appeals process, and we get, 10 appeals a day each. And I go to the mailbox, and I give you your 5, and I take my 5. And then what we've seen a lot is all of a sudden the volume spikes. And, you start to ramp up and all of a sudden you're looking at 5,000 claims and it doesn't work for me to go to the mailbox anymore. We need to hire someone to bring in to get the mail. Actually, probably want them now to document that we've received it, to scan it into a system, to pass us an image. Once we work on the image, there are others that may want to review it. So there's probably workflow management that goes behind that. Passes the image from one point to another. There may be an automated, certainly we have to notify that we've made a decision, so maybe an automated generation of a letter. Want to get that out either in the mail electronically or maybe physically, so may want machinery to generate the letter, to fold it, to stamp it, to put it in the mail for us. So as the system ramps up in volume, the business process changes substantially. And ensuring that you have that continuous improvement loop to prepare yourself for those volumes is critical in the business process world.
And there are other variables out there that maybe you can predict, maybe you can't predict. What about a bad economy? If in 2006 you design a system that's working just swell and everything's just clicking and all of a sudden bad things happen, how do you adapt the system for that? What about budget constraints? I mean, there's a word called sequestration that may impact some agencies. And well, how do you predict that's going to happen? And there are also, let's face it, there are political issues that can pop up that you may be able to predict more easier, but you can't predict some of these variables, can you, Tom?
You can't. And I think those variables all impact the number of appeals and claims coming into the system. So if you look, the economy has certainly been a factor. And when people don't have income of their own, they look to the government for benefits. And when they look to the government for benefits, that means applying. And if they're denied, then that means an appeal. And if you look to our aging population, more people are relying on the government for benefits from that perspective. And then sequestration actually puts pressure on the environment to do more with less. So the automation that we were talking about a few minutes ago becomes critical in efficiency, because the only other alternative in that scenario was for me to hire 100 more of you and I sitting together, and we'd share the paper that way instead of automating the workflow and the process, which is much more efficient and a much better use of government dollars.
So when you sit down with software developers and design systems that involve business process management, part and parcel of is expecting a certain amount of scale to take place and testing that before it's released. And we talked in the break about stress and stress testing, I think, of banks and stress testing. But right. Maybe software has to be stress tested as well for unforeseen circumstances.
Well, and it starts from the business process and the design of the business process and the workflow to, you mentioned software, and there is software throughout the system, but it's really an integration of multiple software packages to get the job done. So as the volume goes up, that's when you'll find where the weaknesses are in the business process and where the integration may not be working. So when you're handling volumes of thousands per month, the potential is that you could lose a case. And as you mentioned earlier, John, this is somebody's medical claim that you're talking about. And losing a case can be critical to their health. So you can't let that happen. So you need to design a system and stress test it at higher volumes than you ever expect to receive.
Yesterday, I was having coffee at a Panera with a fellow for about an hour, and he talked to me about interoperability and something called REST. REST, and I got my ear full about a lot of technical jargon. I think that's, I want to, appeal to some of my audience that's more technical than others. So there's this word called extensibility, and the way it's explained to me is designing systems so they're able to not only scale, but able to accept data from different types of systems, or maybe have applications be able to change. Is that what the word extensibility means in designing this type of software?
It absolutely does in the software world. So I know, from past experience with technology, I'm a little more into the business process now than the technology, but that extensibility really means adaptability and flexibility at higher volumes and to extend into areas that you may not have expected. And I want to give you an example of some of the work that we do today around Medicare appeals. So we've had a volume increase in those Medicare appeals that ramped up from receipts of maybe 5,000 a month to one month where we had 50,000 appeals.
Well, that's a ramp up.
That happened fairly unexpectedly. So the extensibility of the business process led us to, we were in a scenario where we're doing the work mostly in a facility where we hired people and brought them in. But the extensibility led us to having people work at home using virtual workstations. You mentioned early the security. Obviously, this is healthcare data. It becomes very critical to protect that data and have strong security from remote workers. So that ability to ramp up and ramp down based on the volume is extensibility of the business process itself.
And so separate and distinct from the software, it has to be able to adapt and flex to different situations. Interesting. So I think we've established the problem. So thousands and thousands of claims going along with that would be appeals. And so we have appeals that take place. If you look at Maximus, we see that Maximus not only handles federal appeals, they handle state appeals as well. So you've got a little bit of record on exactly how to manage these things, don't you? And we're not talking about, there's thousands of them that take place in all different levels. Let's go step by step. So I place a claim for a broken arm and it gets denied for some reason. What's the step-by-step process? What happens next?
Right. So under most healthcare systems, if you feel that claim was denied improperly, then you have the right to make an appeal to an independent review organization who, outside of the person who initially reviewed the claim, looks at the rules for your health plan or the Medicare laws or the Medicaid laws in the states and makes an interpretation of, were you treated fairly in the way that this claim was adjudicated, and should you be paid for the claim instead? Often there's another step beyond that, John, that you could take even if you were denied on appeal and you still felt that you were denied improperly. There's a step usually for administrative law judges to make a decision on the appeal.
And so what Maximus does is because, well, you've been in business since 75, you've been handling a lot of these problems since 79, I think 89 is what I read. You must have a whole group of people across the country who are subject matter experts who you can bounce ideas off of or maybe ask their opinions on certain specific medical situations. Is that right?
We do. We have experts. We have lawyers and clinical experts, and we have a panel of physicians across the country because a lot of times it's not a broken arm. It's a neurology problem. So we have that reviewed first, usually by a nurse who specializes in that area, and then a physician who specializes in that area. If there's a question about how the law should be interpreted, we have lawyers on staff that look at the law to ensure that we're interpreting it correctly. And it takes that kind of expertise to make the decision. So underneath those people are the technology that we've been talking about to ensure that we're using their expertise and that we don't have them spending their time on the logistics of going to get the mail and opening the mail and doing the more mundane efforts around managing high volume.
3 months ago, we had Brian Civic in here from HHS, and we had Todd Park from the White House sitting right where we are at right there. And Todd Park, and I remember distinctly what he said. He said, we're all about improving outcomes and reducing cost. And that's a noble goal. And I think we can put that on billboards. But okay, let's take it off the billboard and put it on the table here and show me exactly what improving outcomes means. And I think resolving disputes and rendering an impartial appeal, that comes under the general heading of improving outcomes, I would think, because the outcomes work both ways. You have to have an outcome that's fair to the claimant, an outcome that's fair to the provider as well, because there's always two sides to these.
Well, I think it extends beyond that in government. I think that the government could do a lot more with outcomes-based contracting. So let me give you an example outside of healthcare. So immigration reform is a hot topic right now, and the goal of if immigration reform passed, the goal would be to find those people who are here illegally that should be put on a path to citizenship. So the outcome would be getting those people enrolled in the program and convincing them to stay in the program on that path to citizenship. Those programs could be tied to payments and business process that result in that outcome. Instead of saying, hire somebody to build us a system to help enroll those people. So if the outcome is finding and enrolling, or if the outcome is making a accurate appeal decision in a timely fashion, I think aligning payments to that brings better value to the government.
Let's close on value. I think all of our listeners are interested in value, and take a break and come back, talk more about healthcare IT. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Tom Romeo, President, Maximus Federal Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Tom Romeo, President of Maximus Federal Services. The general topic is healthcare IT, and today we're drilling down into the nitty-gritty of it is what happens when you have a claim and you have to dispute the claim or you have to appeal the claim. What is the process? And we looked at actually from the citizen's perspective and the perspective of designing software in the business process management file to scale and to handle different types of security situations. Many of my listeners, actually very few read books anymore, but a lot of them listen to radio, obviously. A lot of them blog and tweet and read blogs. And I'll be blogging about this. If you want to see a picture of Tom and me, you can go to my blog. You just go to Google, type in John Gilroy blog, and my blog pops up. Are there blogs that you read? How do you get information about this whole crazy mess that changes all the time, Tom?
Sure. So now I'm going to be a big fan of the John Gilroy blog.
Obviously, oh, yeah.
I obviously have Google alerts on a lot of the related health information. And so on a daily basis, see what pops up around what's happening with health reform and appeals and claims and those types of topics. I do read blogs, but really usually get to them through searches on specific topics that I'm interested in. So I don't think there's any that I go to on a regular basis. And then magazines like Health IT and healthcare news are very good sources for me. And then the federal magazines because of the federal government focus of my area of the business.
Well, it's interesting that you do a search on a specific topic and then wind up at a blog, because many of my listeners do a search on a specific company like Maximus and may wind up listening to this interview when there's snow on the ground. Or they may type in healthcare appeal, or they may type in VA or VA benefits or appeal, and they'll stumble on this show and listen to it and go, oh, Maximus, how do I, and get an insight in how it handled. And another idea, I think, is what if you're working for a different agency and you have a business process management that involves a claim? Maybe an agency has to certify someone to comply with a process, and it has to be appealed. Well, there's an appeal process based in there, and this is a lot of lessons discussed today about scalability and appeals process that applies to more than just healthcare IT, I think. So a lot of ways to get information. Tell me more about, let's back up into the big company, Maximus. Yeah. Been around since 75. I assume they do a whole lot more than just federal healthcare IT, involved in a lot of different areas. Is that right?
Yeah, we are. Our tagline is helping government serve the people. So we're very focused on government services. And those government services could be at the state level, at the federal level, and internationally in the UK, Saudi Arabia, Canada. So, and our focus is health and human services. So a lot of the work is around helping Medicaid enrollees get enrolled into programs and determine their eligibility. We have won contracts to do 7 health insurance exchanges in the U.S., 6 states and the District of Columbia. And then we do a human services side that focuses on programs like welfare to work and children's health insurance programs. Some of our international work is focused around helping people find jobs.
If you're listening to this and you fire up your little Google machine and you type in Maximus, you may find a column written in the Washington Post, and it's an interview, and it mentions this guy named Bruce Caswell. I guess he works for Maximus, and he talks about, you know, how can we help people learn more about the new insurance regulations? Well, people may be calling in, maybe texting in, maybe want to have online chat. And what I think that's interesting is that, you know, the surveys show that, I would imagine this is true too, 4 to 5 Americans have heard little or nothing about the healthcare exchanges and don't know how it impacts them. And I think knowledge is power. And here it is, 2013, October is kind of a deadline. You're going to have to learn more. By January 1st, you're going to have to make an informed decision. And Maximus plays a key role in helping a lot of different citizens just learn about the options here.
We do. And I think, John, you're right. I think we're going to see a ramp up of information being pushed out into the market as October draws near. And the education requirements are there to ensure that the population signs up for the health insurance that they need. And I think Maximus is in an ideal position to help people understand what that means for them, both in the state exchange work that we do. But, you know, if you take a look at our website, I think there's a lot of links to information around health insurance in general and health reform and what that means to the country.
We spoke earlier about improved outcomes, reduced cost. Okay, 4 words, we know that. If you look at the appeals process, so some people may be listening and going, okay, you got an appeals process. How is that going to improve outcome and reduce cost? Well, I think one way that it can, if you look at it maybe from a detached perspective, is that if an appeal is made and a decision is rendered, that probably will limit litigation somewhere down the road. It makes sense that it would, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. I think making an accurate decision, but supplying the person who had the appeal with enough information to explain why the decision was made and why you determined the outcome makes a huge difference in avoiding the next step in the appeal process, which is very costly. So we just won some work in California to help with their workers' compensation review backlog, so independent medical review of that work. And we know that the cost for them to do that work was very high. We agreed to do it for about half of what they were spending, and we feel that we know that the outcomes can be improved and litigation avoided. So when you add the benefit of having it done less expensively in the first place and avoiding further litigation or further appeals, the cost savings can be very dramatic.
Now, I'm a big believer in standards, and I'm a big believer actually in quality improvement and quality compliance. And from my perspective, if you do the groundwork ahead of time, that can reduce a lot of payment problems down the road. For example, if you go down to Florida and make sure some of these home medical equipment providers are legit, it's going to reduce a lot of bad payments and a lot of litigation and a lot of bad headlines in the Washington Post. Talk about the Washington Post 5 minutes. You get a good headline for you guys. Now, this avoids bad headlines, doesn't it? I mean, it just does. A little bit of prevention.
Well, it's interesting because that area, John, has led to a lot of appeals, actually. So there's been a big focus on the government's part to look at payment accuracy, whether it's overpayment, underpayment, or improper payment. And with that focus comes people appealing decisions about whether or not they should have been paid for a service or a fee. And so ensuring, again, that there's sort of a check and balance there that says, maybe the initial claim was paid. Someone later came back and said it shouldn't be paid. So where do you go for the adjudication that says, well, should I or shouldn't I have been paid? And that's where the appeal decision comes into play.
And I think that's it's more reasonable than spending $50,000 with an attorney in order to start some suit where at least a panel would give some opinions where someone can make an informed decision whether or not to pursue this. And I'm sure there are legitimate claims out there. But on the other hand, I mean, there's a fiduciary responsibility that CMS has not to just give money away to, I'll name the state, to people in Florida who may or may not be ethical.
That's absolutely right, John. And one of the advantages that we've had at Maximus is we don't have any conflicts with companies that would be paid for those services. So we're totally independent in the decision. And that's critical to the government in hiring someone to be this independent review organization, because the last thing you want is a conflict of interest where you're the one selling the device to someone and then you're a company who's reviewing a decision on whether to pay it or not. Our work, because we're focused on government, gives the federal government an option for a company that doesn't have those conflicts.
It can reduce cost, and I think the listeners are reading between the lines here is that leaders in the industry can pound on tables and talk about we must reduce costs. Well, this is putting it in work boots and saying, okay, let's find exactly how we can do this. How can we make sure that we're not overpaying or underpaying, or maybe there is a fair claim and we should pay it, and a nice step-by-step process that can reduce cost is using a board of subject matter experts all across the country in a wide range of capabilities, everything from health directors to health attorneys, nurse attendants, and even registered nurses themselves. Let's take a break and bounce back. We'll talk more about healthcare and business process management and claims and appealing those claims. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Tom Romeo, President, Maximus Federal Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Tom Romeo, President, Maximus Federal Services. We're talking in general about healthcare IT. We're drilling down into the claims process and the appeals process that is a sub-branch of that. And, many of my listeners read blogs. Some are involved in Twitter. If you want to follow me, it's pretty easy, @RayGilray. If you want to follow Maximus, what's the Maximus one? Is it Maximus_news? Is that the one to follow?
It is, at @Maximus_news.
So we get all kinds of information. In fact, the Twitter feed will link you back to the articles in the Washington Post that talks about who's the character, Bruce Caswell, who was interviewed and talked about helping people. And he's going to be a famous guy real soon here because he's actually helping people get jobs. And this is the untold story about Maximus, is that maybe a job creator here, huh?
Absolutely. Maximus has grown substantially over the last few years, and we've increased the number of employees that we've brought on working on health reform and helping people find jobs. And if you're looking for a job, go to our website.
And earlier in the interview, you talked about helping people get jobs. I mean, this is an important part. I mean, right. And once you do get a job, helping people with the claims involved in medical care.
That's one of the social aspects of Maximus that I've really grown to appreciate is I visited our D.C. version of a welfare to work program. And so they're helping people find jobs and come off welfare. But when you go to the office, a substantial portion of them were people who came in from welfare and were hired by Maximus to help other people find jobs.
You know, what's funny about Maximus is it has this kind of this Roman title to it, Maximus, and the logo is Roman, all this special architecture from Rome. And you got Romeo here, so all kinds of Italian influence here with Maximus and everything else. You know, some people are listening to you and saying, well, I don't know, you work for IBM. Is he really a nerd? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. And what I've designed is a scientific 10-question test that will resolve all the questions of my listeners whether or not Tom Romeo is, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. And first question is, Tom, this is going to date both of us, but when did you buy your first personal computer?
So I was 35, John, and we were sharing a story earlier that, so I think the answer to am I a nerd is I used to be a nerd. I think they've revoked my card, unfortunately.
So you're not a wannabe nerd, you're a used to be nerd.
Right. But I did, the story we were sharing earlier was that I was around at IBM when they came out with the first portable, and I'll put that in quotes, portable computer that weighed about 50 pounds and had a metal casing. And I used to take that around to customers and demo Lotus 1-2-3 on a 3-inch green screen.
I remember those were late 70s, I think, so that's interesting. When did you get your first cell phone?
I was probably about 45, and I was traveling at the time, and it was before security at the airports got too heavy, and it's a good thing because it was about the size of three bricks.
Oh, I can imagine. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
And you don't have a personal blog. That's a bad mark. Oh, that's really a bad mark on you. And what kind of personal online backup services do you use?
I use the Apple Cloud services.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
An Apple.
Okay. And how many apps do you use there on a monthly basis, let's say, on your little phone?
Probably about 30 or 35.
30. You use those that often. Hmm. And the new question is, how many tablet devices do you have at home?
Yeah, so I have two Macs, I have an iPad, an iPhone, I have a Kindle.
Ooh, so you get the whole range, the whole checklist.
I get the whole collection. And I have to say, you know, so I worked at IBM for 25 years. I couldn't have an Apple device for 25 years. So when I came out of IBM, I fell in love with Apple.
So. What social networking sites are you involved in? Foursquare, Facebook, anything?
LinkedIn.
And here's the key question. The last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
So I read a lot. I also drive a lot. So I listen to books on tape and I use the Kindle. So the last book that I read on the Kindle was Inferno by Dan Brown.
So we have electronic here, huh? That's good. So I'll have to run this through my UNIVAC computer in the basement and print it out on Green Bar, and I'll put it in U.S. mail, and in the next 5 months you'll get it, and we'll find out if you're in fact a card-carrying nerd. Although interesting that you went to the Apple side of the force, the dark side of the force, as I call it, but there's nothing wrong with that. We're not going to give you hard questions for the next 10 minutes because of that, but it's a great product. We all know it's a great product. This is a sports studio, and they have sports stuff around here, and they used to actually have like an eight ball, and they do predictions here, and I seem to have lost it or something, but I'm going to give you a figurative eight ball here, a figurative crystal ball. So what's going to happen the next 4 to 5 years with the whole idea of healthcare processing? Is this backlog going to be normal? Is it going to be reduced? Or are we going to look back and say 700,000 claims? Oh, that was very little, or is that was a whole lot? I mean, in general, the next 4 or 5 years, where do you think the whole system's heading?
Well, I think health reform is going to bring a whole new wave of people into the health insurance market. So the claim volume is going to increase dramatically. The interesting thing is that when you address a claims backlog, the bubble moves to the appeals backlog. So if you have claims that have been waiting for a long period of time and you catch up on those and you deny some of them, obviously people are going to appeal those. So the next backlog occurs in the next step in the process. But I think, John, as we see the uptake in health insurance in general across the country, it's going to lead to some interesting stress factors on the whole health system, including claims, but actually primary care providers and hospitals and other facilities where people may have avoided going in the past. Now they're going to have insurance and they're going to be looking for those services.
You know, trying to look at it from an outsider, like when you spent time in Canada, look at it. If you look at the American system now, if you get sick, you can waltz into any hospital in the emergency room and they have to treat you. whether you're insured or not. And I don't think people realize that or not. And what I realize is that that is a very, very expensive system. That is an incredibly expensive system. People go into emergency rooms for well baby visits. That's just so expensive, and the system has to change. Whether you agree with Obamacare and don't agree with Obamacare, I think everyone agrees that it has to change. And I think it's worth examining the new process and just see what happens. It's like so many things. It's like they design an airplane on paper, and then let's hope it can fly. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it has to be changed. I think this is a critical time, I think, in the history of my kids, when my kids are my age and look back and go, oh, I remember in my 20s, I had to make this choice and that choice, and it had long-term impact. But the decisions made today are going to have really 30, 40-year impacts, aren't they?
Well, I think, John, they are. And I think the interesting thing that opens up is the use of information technology in healthcare. As more people are registered and part of a system, you can collect more information, and both from a personal perspective to analyze what's best for them, but in a public health perspective, if you have volumes of data on people's trends, you can react better to managing people and their healthcare. And while we're right now, health reform is really addressing access to healthcare. The next step will be the quality of the healthcare and trying to reduce the cost of healthcare by ensuring that people get the right level of care at the right facility. So to your point, if you have a sore throat, you should go to a walk-in clinic, not an emergency room.
And the big fancy word is longitudinal studies, and they look at patient registries and disease registries and look at trends over time. And in a paper-based system, that's rather difficult to improve quality by knowing what happens with large numbers of people. But if you have electronic health records and information can be derived over a long period of time or a large population, all of a sudden a physician can make an informed decision on a problem, and that can improve quality and, guess what, reduce costs.
Exactly right. So it's all, I think, in catching things early and preventing them and providing the right treatments at the right time.
I was just talking to a physician, and he went to see a doctor, and the receptionist there made him fill out this paper thing, 5-6 pages. And he said, why should I do this? She said, well, it's our policy. Everyone has to fill in the paper. And he said, well, it's my policy that you have to have an electronic health record. No, I couldn't get away with that because they'd throw me out a window. But if I were a medical doctor and I were arrogant or cocky or sure of myself, and I think increasingly people in their 20s, when they go to see a physician, they're going to expect the physician to have an electronic health record. Why? Because that's part of their DNA. And of course, there's an EHR there because that's how it should be. It makes it. Why should they pencil in their social security number, maybe transpose a number, and then there we have a claim that doesn't get paid and has to be appealed. All of some silly little numerical item.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, you listen to the radio today, you hear Kaiser advertise about email interchanges with your physician and your healthcare plan. And I think it's what the next generation should expect from their healthcare provider.
We'll see. Well, thank you very much for the interview. We've covered a wide range of topics, everything from healthcare IT to claims processing, the backlog, how to handle the backlog, and maybe some of our information technology listeners can learn about business process management and some of the best practices involved in that. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today, Tom Romeo, President, Maximus Federal Services. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.